Mr. Sykes, Reel 9. We're talking about your time in the Udine camp in northern Italy, PG66. And we were looking at sort of the life conditions in the camp. You mentioned what you got parcels from outside. Did you get any stuff from the Red Cross or the Italians or from anybody to enable you to sort of play games or sporting equipment or theatrical equipment or stuff like that? Did you get any of that while you were there?
Yes, we got. We used to play cricket, and that was supplied by the Red Cross. And most of all, and I don't know why this was, we played baseball, of all things.
So and the equipment was
the
sent
equipment,
to you?
Was sent by the Red Cross. That's right.
Did you play cricket or baseball?
Oh, I played everything. Yeah, and football. We played football.
What were the matches like? Were they sort of knockabouts?
They were pretty, there was a pride attached to it.
They'd be on national basis, mainly?
I don't know who organised it all, but, you know, it would be like little test matches. New Zealand versus the Aussies, and the Aussies versus the English, and all that kind of thing.
Would everybody get a chance to play, or would it just be the good players?
it wasn't everybody that wanted to. It was mostly people that wanted to.
But if you wanted a game of cricket, could you get a game, even if you were no good?
Oh, well, I mean, you could play, you could have a game whenever you wanted at anything, really. You know what I mean? It was only to pick the best guys out when we were having these little test matches.
And what about the wicket? Because cricket's, you can't just play on anything.
No, it was all, it wasn't grass, you know, it was... all like compound, an ordinary earthy compound, nothing special. And you just knocked it out as best you could, and did the best you could, you know.
And you had a bash at all the games?
I had a go at most of them, yes, because at that time I was feeling young and active.
No after effects from your wounds at the time?
Not really, no. They seemed to. Go on.
What about other entertainments organised?
Also, while we were there, we ran a concert party and a theatrical group.
What was the difference?
Well, the concert party did things like vaudeville acts and all that kind of thing, you know, comic reviews, even blokes dressed up as girls dancing and blokes singing and playing the piano and that sort of thing. Whereas the other theatrical group put on plays like The Importance of Being Earnest and that sort of thing. And I was in the concert party.
Things like pianos, things like that, were they?
Well, whether they were provided by the camp or whether they were provided by the Red Cross, I won't really know, but they had this big hall in which we had our concert parties, and there was a piano in there.
And what did you do in the concert party? What was your role?
Well, I was in one or two of the sketches and things like that. You know, used to
comic sketches?
Comic sketches, that sort of thing, yes. And we used to rehearse these, and then... because there were so many in the camp, and you could only get so many into the hall, you used to do it four or five nights a week to a different audience every night. And while we were putting the concert party on, the theatre group were rehearsing their plays and everything to put on as an alternative while we did another concert.
Did you not fancy the theatre group?
No, I didn't actually.
Why was that?
I don't know. I got asked to be in the concert party, and I've always been, as I said, happy to go because I liked the idea of that. It was quite funny to see. I always remember we did a sketch once in a hospital, and there's a bloke dressed up as a nurse, and he looked. because we were in this place, there were so many different trades and so many different skills with all the people that were in it. That you'd got people that knew how to make costumes, people that knew how to put makeup on them and all that kind of thing, make wigs and all that. And it was all out of more or less scrounged stuff, you know, I mean, from Red Cross parcels. And where we got the material from, the sheets and things like that. But it was really quite professional, all these concert parties. They were quite, you know, they weren't amateurs. They were quite professional because, as I say, a lot of the people that were there were in the profession anyway. And I always remember this chap dressed up as a nurse. And, you know, he looked really like a proper nurse. And when he came on the stage, people were whistling him and everything, you know. And in actual fact, he was a boxer from Tasmania. That was his profession. He was actually a professional boxer. And they made him up to look like a real classy nurse. And it was surprising, you know. Once the vehicle does into it, we did a dance routine, got dressed up as good, but that was a take-off. We weren't, you know, we were sort of wigs and tutus.
Obviously men dressed as women.
Obviously men dressed up as women. It wasn't meant to try and make us look anything like that. And we did all these dance steps in line. We were like, crap, I suppose, eventually, but it really went down very well, you know what I mean?
Did you spend a lot of your time doing, you know, working in the concert part?
Yeah, quite a lot, really, because, as I say, when we weren't doing one, we were rehearsing for another one.
Would you go and see the theatre groups?
What we did, it was a thing made between us. They would come and see our dress rehearsal of the concert party, and we would go and see their dress rehearsal of their theatre. And in the theatre group, they were really clever, they were. I remember them doing The Importance of Being Earnest. And some of the gowns and things that they made for these Lady Bracknell and all those kinds of things were something else. They really were very, very, very good. Where they got all the stuff from, I don't know. But they really were quite professional. Quite professional.
Was there any other entertainment things you could do? Was there a library, for instance?
A library. There was... we used to... John Walker taught us to play bridge.
The library, was that set up
as far as
by the Italians, or was it set up by...
I don't know whether it was set up by the Red Cross or the Italians. All I know there was a library.
Did you use it much?
I didn't use the library myself. I was more into the game side of things rather than the... So I'd got the hook to look after. I was in the concert party, and when I wasn't that, I was either playing games or playing bridge or something like that.
Now you said, John Walker, you met up with John Walker
John
again?
John Walker, yes. And John taught us to play bridge. And he taught us the Cuthbertson system. And we spent hours, because I mean, time was something we got plenty of.
Who would play then? You and what?
Me and John and two or three more people. My brother was one of them, he taught then. They'll tell him about it when we see him. And John taught us how to play bridge, and we got quite good at it actually. And then we used to play one another, you know. We used to play against the Aussies, for instance, and they played, I think it was called the one club system. In other words, they played a different system. John taught us the system he knew, and we used to play against other people who played to a different system. So we had some really good tomorrow.
What about educational? Were there any opportunities to any courses run, either informally or even to exam level?
Not that I know of. Not that I'm aware of. There could very well have been. But I wasn't aware of them at the time.
How did you get on with... Are you still Italian guards?
And they had Carabinieri. There was Carabinieri were there as well. In fact, I think the Carabinieri were... I'm not sure whether they were the Italian police. But they had Carabinieri prowling around the camp.
Inside?
Inside. Two at a time, with these big hats on. And they would, apart from the blokes round the camp, they would patrol inside the camp. One of the things we got while we were there, if you remember, as I've told you, as we were going along, we haven't got much gear, and me in particular, I haven't got a lot because I've been blown up and I haven't got my old things. And in fact, somebody made me a pair of trousers out of an old blanket. So that's virtually all I've got. And the most of us were pretty well in the same sort of boat. So the Italians gave us Italian uniforms. They kitted us out with Italian uniforms, with the riding breeches and the puttees, and they didn't have socks, they had foot wrappers and brown boots, and these tunics and hats, and they had a red triangle sewn into them. They gave us these, and we looked like birds.
Was a triangle to show you were a POW?
Prigioniero di guerra, I think they called them, weren't they? Prigioniero di guerra. And they dished us out.
Did everyone wear them? Or
we all had them.
People didn't keep their old uniform or what was left
of them? No, it wasn't worth most people. Well, I can only speak for the people I know. The stuff we got was so bad that you would like to get see the back of it because it wasn't worth keeping. So.
Was there any question of escape or escape committees or anything like that?
Oh yeah, there was one hut where they had kept all the escapees in. Where
the Italians had deliberately concentrated them.
Oh, that's right. They had these escapees in a hut. And these had been people who had escaped from other camps, who had rounded up and put in this camp. Oh yeah, they had...
Was that hut particularly guarded or watched? Or was
no, more than any other hut. There was a down from China, same as others. There was no extra guard or anything like that. It was just that they were kept there, and of course, when it came to counting, they were... Made sure it was all in there, that sort of thing, you know. But there was an escape reason.
But was there was there any actual that they were people being caught?
Yeah.
Was there any actual efforts made by the people within the camp to escape?
They used to have an escape committee and everything and talk about it. But to my knowledge, I never knew of anybody that escaped from that camp.
So the escape committee was more of a talking shop at that point?
More with an idea of trying to escape. But I don't know. But you've got to remember, again, that it was a huge camp. There was sort of thousands in it. and you couldn't know everything that was going on. But I don't know of anybody that actually escaped.
Did you take any interest in escape, or what did you think about the whole topic?
Oh, well, they told us, we sort of knew that the idea was that if you could escape, it was your duty to try and escape. And although we see, eventually, we did escape, but that's another story. But at this particular camp,
did you see much chance of escaping?
No.
From
I didn't really, because it was a fairly heavily guarded camp, with only one sort of entrance, really. And it was very difficult. one of the things that we got while we were there, and I don't know how it came about, but they used to issue little tickets that were valued so many lira, and you could buy some vino. If you were that way inclined, you could, that was another trading thing, you'd trade where...
Where from could you buy it, sorry?
From the Italians.
They had a sort of shop or...
Yeah, well, there must have been a shop or something, but yes. And it was the hut that you could come buy it from. But you could save up and buy some vino. And I remember once an Aussie had bought... Must have saved a bottle load of vino. Got so drunk, tried to climb the wire and they shot him. And killed him. Because I saw him carrying him away. But he got so drunk, whether he'd been depressed or. And he'd had this wine and he did. But they'd warned him and he tried to climb away and. Why they actually shot him, because they could have got him down off the wire. I mean, he wasn't going anywhere or sort of thing. But they just shot him.
Did you ever buy wine?
No. No, I wasn't doing that.
Did you, again, use it for exchanging for food? Or
My tickets, yes. That's fine. Anything... That's how we read it, but anything for food. I was into the food things. Didn't want the wine or the cigarettes. Food was the thing. To keep strength.
Did you manage to keep your strength and your weight up?
Yeah, well, one time we kept our weight up, but it's surprising in a way how little you can survive. Nowadays you eat a lot, but you don't really need that to really survive. And I mean, the Italians, they had, or they seemed to have, one meal a day at midday. I never really seen them. Whereas we used to have breakfast, dinner, and tea, we were used to that. They seemed to have very little in the morning, a cup of coffee, something like that, and meal at midday, and that seemed to be it.
So they weren't treating you much differently than they treated themselves.
as far as I know, somebody somewhere, don't ask me who or why or how. Seemed to know about the Red Cross code, you know, how prisoners should be treated, and the idea was that prisoners of war should be treated as the home troops as they were treated. Now, when we were in Egypt, we treated the Italian prisoners to our kind of rations and didn't think they were doing all that well. Where to them, they must have been living in absolute luxury when you consider what their troops were. And I believe that they were more or less giving us pretty well what their home troops were getting. Because the old loaf of bread, they must have got more of it. It must have been thicker and all that kind of thing. But that, basically, it was their basic rations, if you understand.
Were you put on work at all while you were in
there? No, not at all.
Nobody was in the camp?
Not that I know of. No, there might have been one or two. Oh, wait a minute. There was one or two. Yes, there was. There was one or two light duty works. What it was, I don't know, because I never went on it. Whether they were recruited to go on it or whether they were landed up to go on it, I don't know. One or two went out and did jobs. I'm not sure what kind of jobs they did, but they went out there about and did the odd job or two. Whether it was for farmers or all that kind of thing, I don't know. But I never went out from that camp.
Anything else you remember about your time at Udine?
yes, later on, towards the winter, we got all British uniforms.
So was the Italian replaced then by this?
All the Italian gear that we got was replaced by British gear. We had
what British sort? KD or battle dress?
Battle dress. It was all khaki battle dress with the red stripe, with the red triangle sewn onto it. And particularly, we had vests and socks and pants and British, all British gear.
And what about overcoats?
And an overcoat. Yes.
And the Italian stuff was handed in?
And the Italian stuff was handed in, yes.
Anything else?
I mentioned the sports, the concert party, the counting every day about the red range shop. No, I think by and large that was, you know, we've covered most of the things that happened. Well, one thing that we did on a regular basis while we were there was get deloused. They had a big room where there were showers. They had a big kind of steam ovens, and on a fairly regular basis, probably once a month or maybe even less than that, once every 3 weeks, you went and you had your shower, and all your clothes were put into the, while you were in the shower, put into this oven, and you were deloused.
And was that successful in keeping the lice at least
dead? Pretty well. Although you couldn't get, didn't seem to matter what you did, you couldn't get rid of lice. And as far as I know, everybody seemed to get them. The surprising part was that the more food you got, in a way, the less lice you seemed to get. Whether it was psychological or whether it was the fact that you felt better when you were a bit healthy, when you got more food, and therefore it didn't bother you so much. But when you were down, the lice bothered you a lot more.
What about the latrine arrangements?
Well, they weren't bad, actually.
What pattern were they?
Seats, you know, the empty, like wooden seats that you sat on, and they emptied the thing. They weren't flush toilets, that kind of thing.
But they were clean enough.
Oh, they were clean, yeah.
What about washing?
Yeah, washing facilities were on, showers and wash, you know, washing huts. You went to a hut where you were washing.
And you could wash your clothes there, could you?
Oh, you washed your clothes on the way out. Oh, I did. That was something else that was in the Red Cross Parcels, so. Yeah.
Did you think the camp was a reasonable camp then, overall?
Oh,
as a prisoner of war camp.
As a prisoner of war camp, I would say it wasn't too bad. I would say it was probably the best that the ITIS could do, if you understand what I mean by that. Yeah. Oh yeah, they did the best they could, I think. I don't think they got a lot themselves, really. And I think they looked after it the best.
Now, were you aware of the approach, you know, of the events of the war, the British invasion of Italy?
Well, we used to have somebody go around the huts. Where they got the news from, God only knows. But people would go around the huts and read out bits of news that they got. They'd go around and come around. The news up lads, sort of thing, you know. Oh, and I'll tell you something else we've got while there. The occasional letter from home and that kind of thing, and the parcels. You know, we've got letters and parcels from home.
What would the letters say? Would they say how the war...
Well, no, they were heavily censored. Letters were always censored. And any that we wrote, they were censored as well. So you just... You were careful if you wrote.
Did you realise the Italians were... You were moved in, I think you said, September.
That's right.
That's round about the time of the, you know...
Well, we knew... We had a sort of feeling that things weren't going very well for them.
What? How did you get that feeling?
Well, from the news that we got, you know.
Not from the way the Italians behaved then.
No. Well, you see, you didn't really come into contact with the Italians because all your activities and all the things that went off were done between you, as it were. And you didn't, as I say, the contact with the Italians was done by this Sergeant Major and his cronies and people that there might have been one or two senior NCOs. I mean, I was one of the most senior NCOs because I was a fully fledged sergeant, as it were, and we were in. So there was only Sergeant Majors above me in rank because all the officers went to an off leg.
So what happened then in September?
Well, in September, one day, this little officer came in and announced that they got us all together, all lined up in this big room. And announced that the Italians had surrendered and given up the war, or, you know, capitulated or whatever it was.
This was the first you heard of it?
This is the first we heard of it.
What was the reaction?
Well, everybody cheered and stamped and raved. And the first thing everybody did, don't ask me why, was tear off the
Red triangles.
And the whole, when we walked off the parade ground, the whole thing was covered in red triangles. And they said, you're all right. They capitulated. You'll all be going home. So don't worry, you know. Go back to your beds. And
Who said that? The Italian?
The Italians. Said, go back to your beds. You'll all be all right. And they opened up the store and dished out all the parcels and all the things that were going, and we all had a good do that night and everything.
Were you not aware of the possibility of the Germans taking over the camp?
Not a bit.
Did it occur to anyone?
Well, if it did, nobody said, because we all, I think, as far as I know, there might have been one or two who shot off out of the camp. But we were with him telling us that we were going to be repatriated and everything was going to be all right. And we got all these parcels, everybody enjoyed themselves and thought everything was going to be all right. And of course, we woke up the next morning surrounded by Germans.
The very next morning.
The very next morning, we were rounded up. There was Germans all around the camp. The very next day. They got us into the parade ground again, and this young, probably a captain or whatever he was, spoke perfect English, and he said, right, you've all been moving from this camp, you will go in batches of 50, we will march to the station in batches of 50. There'll be a Flammenwerfer, which is a flamethrower, stationed every so far down this road. And if one of you tries to escape, the flamethrowers will be turned on all of you.
Do you think he meant it?
I'm sure he did. And every so often, what we just called when the march is off, they'd got down these roads from the camp to the railway. They'd got these machine guns as well.
They really did have Flammenwerfers, though.
Oh, they stood there with these. First time I'd ever seen one in my life. You know where a Flammenwerfer was, and you know, a flamethrower. I'd never seen one.
How did you? I mean, you thought you were virtually free.
We thought we were free.
And then the gate sort of slammed shut. How did you feel?
Not very happy about it. I think we blame the archives for telling us that everything was going to be all right, that we were going to be repatriated.
What would you have done then?
Well, I think that a majority of you would have bugged off. In other words, you'd have cleared off from the camp that night and taken a chance on things, you know what I mean? But they'd assured us that we were going to be all right, that we were going to be repatriated, and to sit tight and more or less wait for it to happen.
Did the British, you know, commanding RSM, or rather the Australian, did he? Was there any orders issued to stay put by our side?
No, no, he came on parade with them and said, you know, this is the situation, and we took it nicely, like all sort of, I mean, we didn't know any different at the time.